You are listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman.
Imagine that's how the Democrats feel right now. Oh my goodness, I think that's how the Democrats feel right now. Sorry about that. I had my rheostat turned all the way down. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. All the Democrats are alike. They're all leftists and socialists, and they're trying to figure out what message can they package this? It feels almost like they're trying to sell us some kind of diarrhea medicine or something, and they realize that if they keep it in the original flavor and in the original kind of consistency, that it's going to taste like something that people usually don't eat. Whatever analogy you want to use, be my guest. So they figured, well, you know what we can do? Maybe we can package this. Maybe if we put a vanilla coating on this, maybe if we put this in a capsule, make it smell like vanilla, and make it, you know, coat it with a little bit of lubricant so it goes down easy, maybe the American people will actually swallow this hoo-ha, which is a fancy term for something else. Because I will say, as a Republican and as a freedom-loving American, what the Democrats are peddling is a bunch of hoo-ha. They're trying to package it. They're trying to put it in, trying to kind of package it. They're trying to slice it and dice it, hide it, cover it. I mean, disassemble it, reassemble it, so that the American people can find it palatable. And what people did in Iowa, you could see that people just did not want to be there. They did not want to run the process. They did not want to deliver the results. And what you had was chaos. Chaos. And when you look at the results, so I've got the finally, after what, how many weeks has it been? I've got the official Iowa caucus results. Pete Buttigieg, whatever his name is, Pete Butte, we'll call him. He wins with 13 delegates, 26.2% of the vote. Bernie Sanders, our resident communist, second place with 12 delegates and 26.1% of the vote. Elizabeth Warren, with 8 delegates and 18% of the vote. And I am not usually one to gloat or to laugh at other people, but looking at Elizabeth Warren's results, all I can say is, ha! Joe Biden, with 6 delegates and 15.8% of the vote. You know, He's close enough in age to my dad that I don't want to laugh at him, because it's almost like I'm afraid that if I laugh at Joe Biden, the police are going to come and arrest me for elderly abuse. And I say that as a 60-year-old guy, so I'm not that far off from where he is or from his age. But the guy, I will say, the guy looks old. The guy talks old. He thinks old. I mean, when he talks about, you know, going home and putting on the record player, what is that? What is a record player? Nobody knows what a record player is anymore. I mean, I think the last time I even had a record player was I was 23 years old, and I had a record player, and then I moved and I didn't have a record player anymore. I mean, after that, there were you know, CDs, and then there were streaming music. You'd plug in your iPod to either your headphones or to your stereo jack on your stereo. But you know, people don't play records, and yet that's how he's thinking. He perceived a question in New Hampshire as an insult, and he insulted a young woman. I mean, that's the part where I'm scratching my head, because he does belong to that generation where, you know, you respect women, you talk to them with respect, and yet he called her some kind of something pony. I forgot exactly what he said. Not worthy of me even bringing it up. But I mean, this is what we have. Bernie Sanders, the guy is a communist. I think it was Ayn Rand who said it best. She said the only difference between communism and socialism is that socialism is voted in. Communism is imposed. But good luck getting out of either of them. And look what's happening in Venezuela now. Venezuela was one of the most prosperous countries in the world, certainly in Latin America. They still have the world's largest reserves of oil and natural gas in the world, largest proved reserves. And yet, you would think that they'd be able to export their way into prosperity, and they have not been able to. Why? Because you've got a very small cadre of people that are part of the party that control the means of production. And those who are not party loyalists and who don't have relationships and connections with party loyalists are cut out, so their businesses fail. So there are people in Venezuela who have lots of money, who have lots of Western dollars and can afford to spend it and waste it. But there is no trickle-down effect. This happens over and over again in countries where there's this top-down management. And, you know, call it by any other name, that's socialism. That's an autocracy. Royalty, you might call it as well. What is the difference between America and places like Mexico and Venezuela and other Latin American countries, and even other countries in the Middle East, is I, the son of Puerto Rican immigrants, can aspire to be much more than what my parents' station was in life and can actually achieve it. There are people that came to this country with nothing and have made excellent lives for themselves. That is the American dream, and that is the American system, where there are mechanisms in place to kind of let the best talent and the best ideas flow to the top. Now, does that mean that people, you know, who are connected don't have an unfair advantage? Well, you know what? Unfair is a relative term, because everyone is always going to have some kind of advantage. Some people are going to have an advantage because they're good speakers. Others are going to have an advantage because they're attractive. Others are going to have an advantage because they're wicked smart. Others are going to have an advantage because, you know, their daddy is Joe Biden. Let's use him, right? Hunter Biden got a $1 billion investment from China. Why? Because he's smart? I don't think so. I heard him during an interview, and the guy is not, he doesn't sound like a very smart person. Actually, sounds pretty stupid. But his father was a well-connected politician, and so, of course, you want to get close to the father, you take care of the children. I'm a father, and believe me, if someone does a favor for my kid, I'm going to be beholden. I'm going to feel beholden to that. So why are people surprised? And why are people trying to say, no, Hunter Biden earned the $1 million a year on the Burisma board, even though he knew absolutely nothing about the petroleum industry and knew absolutely nothing about Ukraine, knew absolutely no Ukrainian, and yet, boom, he's making over $1 million being on the board. Why? Because he's smart? Because he knows the petroleum industry? Because, you know, because he knows Ukrainian? He knows the business? No, because he knows his father, and he knows his father's going to take care of whoever takes care of him. That is the ticket. Take it from me. It's my prediction. Biden, he's already left New Hampshire. He knows he's not going to win in New Hampshire. He thinks he's going to win in South Carolina. Now, I don't think South Carolinians are going to vote in droves for Buttigieg. I could be surprised. I don't think so. It could be, you know, it could be a toss-up between Sanders and Warren, but I don't think I think Biden is done. He may come in number two, and if he comes in number one, it's going to be a close call. That's my prediction for South Carolina. In New Hampshire, that's Sanders territory. He's going to win that because people feel like, oh, we should help this little old guy out. We'll be right back. Oh, yes, indeed. I'm, that's, that music was from way before my time. That's Happy Days Are Here Again from Ben Selvin and the Crooners. Although I didn't hear any voices, but everyone knows that one. When I was a kid, we used to sing that song. Happy days are here again. The teacher fell and broke her head. And the doctor came and she was dead. Happy days are here again. I don't know if kids sing that song, but that was kind of actually kind of cruel to celebrate the fact that your teacher was dead. But kids have not liked teachers while they were students, I think. Forever and a day. It's only later on in life that you realize that you had wonderful instructors that you owe everything to. And that's something that I certainly can say about my first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade teachers. I went to high school in Puerto Rico, and I can't say I remember very many of my high school teachers except for one, my science teacher. He was a good guy. Interested in science, had limited resources, but did his absolute best to wake us up to the wonders of science. And I always enjoyed going to his class. Great guy, somewhat geekish, somewhat bookish, but I certainly hope he's doing okay. The reason I played this song, Happy Days Are Here Again, is because, you know, happy days are here again. We have got some momentum going in our economy. Now, I'm not one to... how can I put this? I need to be careful, because I don't want to sound like I'm gloating or that I wish anybody ill. That's not who I am, guys. I never wish anyone ill. I don't hate anybody. I don't dislike anybody. Well, there are a few people that I don't really like, but that's for other reasons. We can talk about that some other time. But the American economy is doing so well because the other economies of the world are doing so badly. Right now, with this issue with the virus and the, you know, the coronavirus in China, Chinese manufacturing is almost at a standstill. The production of goods and services have been stymied by the fact that people are afraid to go in the streets, because there's a very real calamity going on in China that they're keeping quiet. They've claimed that 1,000 people have died. That number is a heck of a lot more, because imagine a city where a lot of industrial production has stopped and there's practically no traffic on the road, and yet a thick gray smog is covering the city, the result of the crematoriums in the cities in China going at full blast, trying to get basically cremate the bodies. That's what they do in China. They don't bury people, they cremate them. And people then are getting bills for the cremation fees of their loved ones or their friends, family, whatever, however they get the bill. This is really happening. The numbers are staggering in China. And because of that, people are starting to think, you know, wait a minute, you know, we really are putting ourselves at great risk by having all of our resources and all our factories in China. Maybe we need to reconsider how we do business. Maybe we need to start kind of moving our factories a little bit closer to home. So that way, if we do have some kind of supply-side disruption, we can manage it a lot better. The logistics involved in manufacturing is pretty complicated. You know, you look at your phone, and your phone has, you know, it's got plastic, it's got glass, it's got chips, it's got little sensors in there, magnetometers, accelerometers, it's got cameras. All of these things are not manufactured by one company in one place. There are many different companies that manufacture different components, and then they're assembled at the final facilities. China has been just a wonder at kind of streamlining that whole procurement process, so that, you know, everything basically is manufactured and sourced and assembled in China. But now with this virus, the West is realizing that this supposed behemoth in China is actually pretty much still like a third world country when it comes to managing social issues. And so I think that's being reflected in you know, goods and services. I mean, the gross domestic product for the fourth quarter of 2019 was up 2.1%, which is not bad. You know, that's pretty decent for a developed economy such as ours. I mean, it's different if we were Vietnam, you know, and we're trying to basically trying to get up from ground zero. But we're a developed economy, and so to have a 2.1, you know, domestic gross product increase is good. Personal income went up 0.2%, which, you know, let's face it, that's not a whole lot, not very much at all. But the fact that there's still an increase, that you know, wage demands are being met, where people are asking for pay raises. And by the way, my boss is going to get definitely hit up for me. International trade in goods and services, we had a surplus of 48.9. Oh, actually, I take that back. We had a deficit of $48.9 billion, but still not too bad. I mean, we're always going to run a trade balance just because of how we manage our business. But my goodness, you know, we really can't complain about how well our economy is doing. Our manufacturing is increasing. Our unemployment rate is still going down. The unemployment rates for blacks and Hispanics and all immigrants is at its lower level in the history of statistic taking for these particular statistics. I mean, there's a very real boom going on in minority communities. So even if personal income went up only 0.2%, you're seeing a lot of minority people of minority groups getting real wage increases and actually being able to compete for jobs and getting the jobs that they really want rather than the jobs that that they can, you know, they have to settle for. And that's what I find exciting, because when you have demand for labor, an employer is not going to look at some guy and say, you know what, I don't want to hire any blacks. I'm just going to pass. They're going to realize, I've got a guy here. He's qualified. He's black. I usually don't want to hire black people, but I'm going to hire this man because I need a body. And lo and behold, he turns out to be a great employee. And he goes, why didn't I hire people from this part of town? And all of a sudden, other blacks apply for the job. And that resistance to hiring people that are different skin color than them, it goes down. It takes the first hire. That's why I have great hopes for this country, because once those barriers are broken, that the resistance to economic progress and to progress of people of color, it's just that much easier for people of color to progress. And that's what I want. I don't want more welfare. I don't want more damn government programs. That's the kind of stuff that has killed the American Indians. It has sapped American Indians of their vitality and their strength, because they have been given so many government programs that people have basically given up. That's true in American Indian reservations. That's true in Alaska with the Inuit government programs. I know they're well-intentioned. I understand all that. I understand that these government programs are well-intentioned, but just like Ronald Reagan said, beware of the man who says, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Oh my goodness. I'm telling you, I almost don't want to play this song, because right now China is not looking like an ominous, scary entity. If anything, I almost feel sorry for them. Before I begin, allow me to share my China disclaimer. First of all, I am not against Chinese people. I have great respect for them. Their 5,000 years of shared history, their work ethic. I work with many Chinese. I've hired many people, Chinese nationals, and I have admiration for their passions, for their work ethic. And they are probably the easiest employees for me, because they're like those little chicken roaster ovens. All you do is you set it and forget it. You train them, you show them how to do the work, and they will do the work. There's no drama, there's no nothing. These are lovely, lovely employees. I love working with Chinese. I love Asians. As a matter of fact, I love Asians so much, I married one. Been happily married for going on 14 years now to an Asian. I jokingly call her the Dragon Woman, because she's a principal at a school. And she definitely whips that school and those children into shape. So I'm very familiar with the Asian culture. I said it before and I will say it again over and over again. I am 100% opposed to communist China, to the system that dominates the people of China, controls them, monitors them, spies on them, pries on them, represses them, oppresses them, kills them, murders them, tortures them. Simply because the state wishes to be paramount. The state wishes to be God. The state wishes to control every aspect of a Chinese person's lives. That's the reason why so many Chinese want to leave China. And if as many people left China as who wanted to leave China, there would be a wave. The United States population would double overnight. We'd go from 360 million to 720 million people, half Chinese and increasing. This is where they want to come. Why? Why do they want to come here? Opportunity, freedom, a fair and level playing field. Those are the reasons. Because people from China, when they come to America, they can breathe freely. Not just figuratively and politically speaking, but literally. Because the Chinese system is the greatest polluter in the world. The Chinese are the greatest polluters in the world. They produce the majority of carbon dioxide. You think that it's the United States with this developed economy that produces most of the carbon dioxide in the world? Absolutely not. It is China. It is China that produces most of the carbon dioxide, most of the trash in the world. And they don't have programs. They throw it in the river. Look at pictures of the rivers that flow through the cities. They are filthy and disgusting. Why? Because the mandate is for production to increase, and damn the EPA requirements, because the government is responsible for the EPA requirements. All you have to do is maybe bribe an official or two, make your case that this is important for national security, and poof, all of the EPA requirements for that particular industry go out the door. You can just dump whatever you want. You can dump pollutants in the air, you can dump pollutants in the water, you can poison people. This is the system. Power is everything, and the means justifies the ends. And so with this coronavirus outbreak, I think what you're seeing is you're seeing how the system is not working the way it should. The system should have been able to catch the virus outbreak. They should have been able to put controls in place. And what they should have done is they should have been able to control the outbreak. Instead, you have this chaotic scene where the state is trying to use heavy-handed tactics to control the outbreak. And in many cases, they realize they can't control it, so what they're going to do is they're going to manage the death of their own citizens, because it's no big deal. The citizens to the Chinese government, they're just cogs in a machine, and they can be easily replaced. There's 1.2 billion Chinese. They can replace all of the Chinese that die. So they've been putting these Chinese in these wards with no medication, no medical care. Basically, if you live, you live, and if you die, you die. And it's up to the family members to try to save these poor family members. It breaks my heart to know that that's what's happening in China. I don't want to beat up on the Chinese. The Chinese would like to have the same system of government that we have. Why the heck are we trying to change our system of government to look more like theirs? That's the part that I don't understand. The Chinese people are desperate to have a system like ours, and will do anything to get to come here so that they can participate in our system of government, be part of our system, be part of our society. And yet we want to be like them? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I understand that freedom comes at a price as well, because of the system that we live under. If there was some kind of outbreak in the U.S., we would, you know, there would not be armed guards coming in and basically locking you into your apartment, which is what's happening in China. They would not be doing that in the United States because we, you know, that would not be acceptable behaviors. And I understand they're trying to contain the outbreak, but this is the challenge that they have. They've got to get through this somehow. But they get through it by taking care of their people, by allowing the people to do what they need to do. Oh, I've got a caller coming in, and I think I know who it is, so I'm going to go ahead and ring him in. Hello, you are on WARA AM 1320 in Attleboro, Massachusetts. What's your first name?
Devo, you have been saved. Where's the reason is here?
It is my nemesis, Marcus. I was wondering when you'd call, and I was wondering how you were going to defend yourself after the shellacking that you got last week via courtesy of the U.S. Senate.
Well, not a shellacking, because it was all expected. And what I think people need to understand is this. All that has happened is now you know who's involved. Now you know who's complicit, right? And I'd like to give Mitt Romney, can't believe I'm about to say this, Mitt Romney, the courage of voting his conscience. Doug Jones, the courage to vote your conscience. And I want to really put that out there. But that's not why I'm calling today, Henry. I am calling because I'm in a positive mood, and I want to give the president credit.
For what?
I want to give him credit for some things that he has been doing, namely budget. I actually like some of the cuts he's proposing.
Right, some of the cuts to government programs, including Social Security, by the way.
No, I'm not those programs. No. But if you're going if you're cutting the Afghanistan Cricket League, I'm in favor of that. Afghans don't need cricket. We shouldn't fund that. Let them fund that on their own. That's wasteful spending. So I'm all for cutting wasteful spending. I think that's a good move, and he should be applauded for that. But he did say, I'm not touching Medicaid. Why is he proposing cuts to Medicaid?
Pray tell why.
Because I think he's a liar. Right? At the end of the day, all of this comes back down to the man is saying one thing, but he's doing something else. And because of the type of culture we live in this country now, people only pay attention to short sound bites. They don't pay attention to what goes on behind the scenes. Right now, the Democrats are getting killed. And you know, probably he's doing a wonderful job of this, too. You got to give credit where credit is due. Of like, oh, the do-nothing Democrat. There's 400 bills that are sitting on the Senate desk right now that Mitch McConnell won't put up. That's fact. You know how I know it's fact? I saw it on C-SPAN. C-SPAN has like zero political intent. It's C-SPAN. Okay? 400 bills that Mitch McConnell is not bringing to the floor.
I need to take a look at those bills. I want to know why they're not coming onto the floor. I think there's a reason for it. And I need to do a little bit more research. So I'm going to have to give you this one.
Right. My point is that if it was like 50 or 60, I actually got no problem with that. You shouldn't vote on everything. Not everything needs to come up or down. 400 plus, now you're stonewalling. Why are you stonewalling? Why are you sitting on bills that have bipartisan support in the House?
I know that there is definitely one bill that I know about, and that's the use it or lose it end of your budgeting provisions that people have. I mean, I do remember when I was in the Navy, my division had a small budget, and it was like for entertainment, and we were told, You spend it all, or the next year you're going to get 5% less. And so we would put on parties or spend it on things that we really didn't need or want, but we did it because we knew that if we didn't do it, then we wouldn't get the money next year. There are a lot of wasteful programs that, you know, maybe I'm going to go against some of my Republican friends when I say that there are a lot of entitlement programs that need to be evaluated very carefully. And that includes the biggest entitlement program of them all, which is Social Security.
Right. I think from this standpoint, we agree. It does need to be evaluated. But the one thing that we have to remember is how did we get here? Right? How did we truly get to the point where Social Security is about to be insolvent in our lifetime, God willing? How did we get there? Oh, that's right. We borrowed against it. Why did we borrow against it? Oh, I don't know. Because you had Republican leadership that did it. Again, all my friends on the right, I love what you say. Your policies, fiscal conservatism makes sense. People of color can actually dig on that. It's a conservative group almost by nature. But what you do and the systems that you put in place counteract what you say. And for me, as someone who is an independent, a true independent, I got to look and say, do you do what you say you're going to do? Because you can tell me one thing, and then if you do another and I fall for it, then that blame has to be put on me. But if you do, hey, this is what I'm going to do, and then you try to do it, then I ain't got no problem with that. And ultimately, this is where we're at as a country. The president should have the easiest path to reelection that has ever been had by anybody. The economy is the stock market all-time high, okay? All-time high. Can't take that away from him. It's definitely his economy now. He's done well. People have a little bit of money in their pocket, not as much as they would like, but they have some money. But he's facing a potential landslide problem in November. Why? Because he's saying one thing and then doing another.
I don't know about that.
We talk about all this stuff. I heard you earlier talk about, oh, well, Hunter Biden got on the board of this Ukrainian company and he didn't know anything. Well, guess what? Jared Kushner and Ivanka's security clearances failed. Fact. They did not pass. Period. Saying they were unqualified to have security clearance. Well, how did they? Somebody. And I don't fault him for that. But you can't say that, oh, we're going to crucify Hunter Biden for making poor choices, when that's what the wealthy do. Unqualified people are running stuff that they have no business running simply because they're well-connected.
Hold on. I'm going to have to stop you there just for a moment, because there's a difference between Ivanka and Jared, perhaps not having a security clearance because of the criteria involved. But they did not ride on their father's coattails to secure a $1 billion investment from a Chinese company after hitching a ride on Air Force One to meet with the Chinese. Nor have they gotten any sweetheart deals yet. Perhaps in the future, who knows? Because again,
really?
It's about connections. But they have. Well, this would have all come out, and this would have been all over the media if they had used their positions. To positions, you know, their relationship with their father, to leverage that into sweet business deals, which has not happened. They've managed businesses, but they've had these businesses. Absolutely.
Wow, Henry. Are you serious? People, this is readily available information. The problem is it all gets swept under the rug because 45 gives you stuff daily.
Oh, I disagree.
You're telling me that Jared Kushner's bailout from the Qataris, $1 billion, was not because of where he was in his position of influence? Really? Okay. China's not passing patents for Ivanka left and right because all of a sudden she's close? Really? Very interesting take, Henry. Very interesting.
This bears some further evaluation, because I will tell you, 97% of all the coverage that is of the president is negative. If the media were protective of the president, I could see where a lot of this stuff wouldn't be wouldn't be broadcast. But I have heard absolutely nothing of what you said. I'm going to look it up myself, and I'm going to make a note, and I will
randomly
be able.
Available.
I can't respond now because I'd have to stop and look, and I want to respond from a position of knowledge. But I will tell you that the amount of corruption and the double dealings that Democrats have with their kids, it pales. It pales anything that maybe that Trump has done so far. Now, after he is out of the presidency, I'm sure he's going to be signing deals, all kinds of stuff. I'm sure of it. And good for him. You know what? He can, because I talked about everybody's got an advantage, and some advantages are kind of, that they're quicker to be utilized than not. But and sometimes, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know that gets you in the door.
Yeah.
But even then, in this economy, if you have a superior product, if you have a superior idea, you can get it to market and you can make a heck of a lot of money. You know, and something comes to mind. It can be something as simple as a toy. The Super Soaker. I'm sure you know the story of the Super Soaker.
Know it very well.
Yeah, an engineer who...
It went down as most things go down in the history of this country. Someone who had money ripped off an idea or stole from someone who didn't. Because big bank take little bank has been true since the day before forever.
He made a lot of money on that idea. He made a lot of money.
He did. Not as much as Hasbro made.
Probably not. But
right.
The system
that
still works.
That system, Henry, is still broken. And here's what the challenge, and I would ask everyone to critically think about this. The guy that invented the Super Soaker, did he make money? Yes. Did he make as much as Hasbro? No. So Hasbro settles the suit and gives him a whopping amount of money. Do you think they really cared? The money's already been made. It's already been stolen. It's giving someone a pat on the head after you've beat them up and taken everything that they really have.
But there was recourse for that. The system worked.
Yeah.
There was recourse.
What's the recourse if you give me $2 million and you made $200? You gave me 1%. I was entitled to the $200.
I think
my idea.
I think he did pretty well. I'm going to have to look at those numbers as well. I think he did pretty well. I mean, the good thing about our legal system is our legal system does compensate people for opportunities lost, not just actual gains, but opportunity lost. So I'm going to have to take a look at those numbers. But the point I'm trying to make is that this system rewards people that have ambition and have drive and have dreams.
And money.
And some people have more advantages than others, but the goal is to get to that next spot. Hey, you know, I got to take a break. Can you do me a favor? Can you hold on
take
to the break.
Break?
All right, hold on to the break because I want to discuss something else with you. All right. You're listening to WARA AM 1320, America in the Now, with your host, Henry Roman, and my special guest, Marcus. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Come on, Marcus. You got to sing along with me, man.
I love my job.
Sing anyway. Come on. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. You can tell I'm in a good mood when I play that song and when I sing along. And when I don't sing along, watch out, because I'm probably in a very bad mood. I'm playing that song especially for you, Marcus, because you just said something that plays right to the point I want to make. You said that you like your job, and you have no intention of singing the song, Take This Job and Shove It, because you like your job. Are you being paid? Are you being compensated fairly, in your opinion?
No.
No. is there the prospect of you obtaining additional remuneration for your labors?
Yes.
Excellent. There is potential. And if you didn't like this job, well, let me say it this way. When you lived in this town and you weren't that satisfied with the job you had and this opportunity became available and this opportunity was afforded to you, you took it, right?
correct?
Yes. You had options. And you have more options. Now, I'm going to ask a sensitive question, because I think people probably know that we're both men of color. So, you know, if people are offended by conversations like this, then, you know, please endure it. Okay, I'm going to ask you a sensitive question. Do you think that this opportunity, do you think it was easier for you to get this job or more difficult because of your skin color? Or did it matter?
I would say over the course of my career, it's actually been more challenging because of it. Having said that, I think for this opportunity I currently have, it was a non-factor.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for actually saying that, you know, to people in the air, because that is becoming more common. And I was mentioning this earlier during my show, and that is there are still people out there that are not going to hire you because you don't look like them, or perhaps because you have an accent or something of the sort. But right now, the economy, the demand for labor is getting to the point where people are willing to set aside their petty prejudices and hire someone. And once that barrier is broken and they see that this person of another color works just as hard or perhaps even harder than what they expected, maybe they had low expectations, that barrier is, in my opinion, either totally gone or seriously disabled for the next person who shows up that maybe has the same skin color. And that's the market, and that's the environment I want to work in. One of the problems, and you know, the Republicans have some issues, and Democrats have some issues, but Marcus, man, you know, I really hate it when my genetic cousin, AOC, whenever somebody says something that she doesn't like, she freaking calls them a racist. You know, and that I feel like that sets me back. That sets us back 10, 20, 30 years because everybody, in her opinion, is a racist. But yet, I saw a picture of her boyfriend. He's a ginger. You know what a ginger is?
Yeah, I mean, you mean he has red hair.
Yeah, he's a red-headed guy, probably of Irish descent. I mean, come on. So, you know, she's talking. She's using that as a tool to try to gain some traction. And I see that way too often from the Democrats. I had a meeting, and I'm gonna share, if you stay on the show later on to the end, I'm actually gonna share something about a development in my political career. There was no issue about where I'm from, what my ethnicity is. The guy, he was curious in the beginning, but he was more curious about what I've done, what I believe in, what my positions are, so on and so forth. Issue of ethnicity never came up. I actually brought it up. And his response was, oh, okay. Yeah, fine. I mean, and move on. This is where I feel that this is why I'm so, like, such a rabid Republican. Do we have issues? Yes. Is Trump an imperfect president? Absolutely. So was Darius, by the way, the king of Persia. So was Nabuchodonosor. I mean, so was David. So was Solomon. So, I mean, I can keep going. So was Abraham Lincoln. So was Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. So was Martin Luther King, man. So was Malcolm X, although I don't know, maybe in the beginning, but not toward the end. I mean, everyone has got deficits. Everyone has got issues. Everyone has got things that are going to disappoint you big time. But it's what they represent. And Trump represents empowerment of the individual, increased religious freedoms, a smaller government, less involvement in foreign wars that kills our people. I mean, these are the things that I respect. What is it that Sanders wants to do? He wants to take over the government, for Pete's sake. He wants to take over the means of production and redistribute. That's what socialism is. It's a failed experiment. That's why I you cannot convince me that the Democrats are a better option than the Republicans. And right now, there's no third party alternative, man. I don't see any third party that is, you know, exciting me. I don't know about you, Marcus. I mean, are you seeing someone in the third party that you kind of like and think that he or she has got what you want?
Absolutely not, because it's a two-party country. But I want to go back to something you said, okay? And Henry, I love what you said, but I'm going to introduce your listeners there who may not be familiar with this phrase. Twice as good for half as much.
I know that.
You
go ahead.
You know that.
Explain. Yeah, go ahead. Tell people.
Twice as good for half as much. And what that is for everyone who doesn't understand is it's a common refrain that's shared with children in households of color. That you've got to be twice as good as your Caucasian,
Hold on, cotton picking second, man. I'm getting a little bit upset. Because you tell me, I bet you dollars to donuts you're not making half as much.
I will share this. The same people that I came in with, okay, the same people that I've come into this industry with that I'm in, all of them, well, not all of them, but a vast majority of them have risen to VP and or C-level positions. I have not. My numbers are better than theirs.
How far along do you think you are to get to that next level?
I'm a lot closer than I am now, but I would say that on the whole, what I've experienced in my career is being passed over for opportunities. And when I say passed over, what I've always said is that I just want the opportunity to interview. Let me interview, okay, which is something I think, Henry, you and I agree on. Let me interview, okay? And when you get passed over for the opportunity to interview, then you have to start asking yourself, what is it?
Well, we don't live in a perfect. I mean, I'm older than you are. I know that.
We don't live in a perfect world.
I know that.
I will say, are there biases that still exist? I hate to say, break it to people. Yeah, it still exists. It really does.
I agree.
And when you call somebody, I had this revelation. When you say somebody is racist. Okay, because the president gets called this all the time. He gets called a racist. And I would say that I don't believe he's a racist. What I do believe is that he triumphs and supports a system in which race is a factor and an overriding factor. And if you don't believe me, ask yourself why the Department of Justice is having a case right now with Byron Allen. Where Byron Allen's lawsuit, if you're not familiar with Byron Allen, he's brought a lawsuit against Comcast for failing to carry his networks, okay? And this is when people have said, hey, we want the networks, yada, 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 and people, they're straight up just not carrying it. And he's saying that one of the factors in that is because it's race.
Marcus, I gotta stop you there because I just ran up against I want you to stay
Byron
on, though.
Allen.
I want you to continue. I want to hear more about this. Can you stay on until after the 7 minute break?
I can't stay on, but Google it real quick. Byron Allen versus the Department of Justice.
All right, man. We're gonna have to do this again next week because I want to hear the rest of this. Because I would like to respond. I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I think our children are gonna have a heck of a lot easier time because remember, it's only been 40 years since people were being attacked with dogs. In Selma, Alabama, simply because they were protesting. But I got to go on a break, otherwise I'm going to get in trouble and lose this gig. Marcus, thank you so much for calling, man. God bless you, bro.
Right.
We are seriously over time here. I'm going to go on our station break. You've been listening to Marcus, my friend. He and I don't agree, but I love what he's got to say, and I always respect him. And at the end of the day, we probably agree on more stuff than not. So we'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Very free. What a great song. We have come a long way, my friends. We have come a long way. There was a time when the filth and the sin of slavery was on the land. And it took the blood of several hundred thousand Americans, both from the North and the South, to cleanse our land of that sin. And there were sins that were committed afterwards, the sins of Jim Crow, the sins of the illegal internment of Japanese during World War II, the sins of not allowing people to ride wherever they wanted to sit on a bus simply because they were, the concentration of a certain protein in their skin was higher than yours. Shameful. And yet through all of that, we have striven to fight for our rights. And there are several in this land who were braver than others. And so today, I mean, this is Black History Month, and there was a time when I thought, oh, Black History Month, I kind of roll my eyes and think, this is just, you know, catering to African Americans. But as I learned about the heroic acts of African Americans, when I learned about their contribution to society, I realized, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I didn't learn in school. And so I have come to embrace Black History Month. But I do it not to cater to a specific ethnic group or because I want to show people how woke I am or that nonsense. I do it because it's important that we educate other Americans about the contributions of all Americans in this land. Now, you know, do I want to see a Hispanic History Month and an Asian History Month? No, not really. But I think it's important that we highlight and showcase the contributions of African Americans, because African Americans have been, I mean, they were slaves at one time. And they were an ethnic group that was put down simply because of their skin color. And so it's important that we use this tool as a way of showing, even though they were oppressed, even though they were slaves, even though, you know, people stole their ideas when they could, even through all this, they still believed in the system. They still believed that they could make a difference, that they could fight for rights, and that maybe they wouldn't have the freedoms that they wanted, but their children would. Just like Martin Luther King said, that he had a dream that his children would not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. He had a dream. And I see that we're very close to achieving that kind of post-racial society where people like my friend Marcus, if they're talented and they have the talent and the opportunities there, that they will be selected, that they will not be held down, or perhaps won't be, that there won't be hesitation in saying, let's pull the trigger on Marcus simply because he's black. That's what I look forward to in a society where it's people who have something to offer. And race is just something, you know, he likes to wear, you know, purple shirts. Oh, yeah, he's black. That kind of stuff. I wanted to talk a little bit about this man called Robert Smalls. There's a word that I can't use on the radio, but he's a bad butt from history. And he truly was, man. This is a man that I'm going to read a little bit about it. Let's see, get rid of this. Okay. This is from Henry Louis Gates. It's from a PBS article about Robert Smalls. Just before dawn on May 13th, 1862, Robert Smalls and a crew composed of fellow slaves, in the absence of the white captain and his two mates, slipped a cotton steamer off the dock, picked up family members at a rendezvous point, then slowly navigated their way through the harbor. Smalls, doubling as a captain, even donning the captain's wide-brimmed straw hat to help to hide his face, responded with the proper coded signals at two Confederate checkpoints, including at Fort Sumter itself and other defense positions. Cleared, Small sailed into the open seas. Once outside of Confederate waters, he had his crew raise a white flag and surrendered his ship to the blockading Union fleet. In fewer than 4 hours, Robert Smalls had done something unimaginable. In the midst of the Civil War, this black male slave had commandeered a heavily armed Confederate ship and delivered its 17 black passengers, 9 men, 5 women, and 3 children, from slavery to freedom. You would think that his story ends there. He actually, later on, ran for Congress and was elected. It says, following the war, Smalls continued to push the boundaries of freedom as a first-generation black politician, serving in the South Carolina State Assembly and Senate, and for five non-consecutive terms in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1874 to 1886, before watching his state roll back Reconstruction in a revised 1895 Constitution that stripped blacks of their voting rights. That's when the dawning of the Jim Crow laws, which is terrible. But he died in Beaufort, South Carolina, on February 22nd, 1915, in the same house behind which he had been born a slave. He was an incredible man. In the face of the rise of Jim Crow, Small stood firm as an unyielding advocate for the political rights of African Americans. He said, "My race needs no special defense for the past history of them and this country. It proves them to be equal of any people anywhere. All they need is an equal chance in the battle of life. I have said that over and over again. Give me an opportunity. Give me the chance to succeed or fail and get the heck out of my way. I'll do the rest."
You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. And toward the end of my show, I tend to put on a little music. So I, from what I understand, my show has to end at 6:30, so I've got 7 minutes or so. I did want to share with the audience that I was approached by the GOP here in town by a lovely person, and I don't know, since I don't have his permission to use his full name, I'm just gonna use his first name. Excuse me. Let's see. First name Jason. He is the I want to make sure I get his proper job title because that's important. Let's see. Okay, well, that's another email. I need to use another one. There's nothing worse than having dead air. But basically, Jason, who's with the Democratic, with the Republican Party, sorry about that, Jason. Earlier in the year, I think probably in April, I had expressed my interest in running for state office. And I've been talking on the radio show about getting involved, about doing something, about not just complaining about things that you don't like in the system. If you don't like the system, then get involved to change the system. And so, you know, it is time for me to kind of put up or shut up. So he called me and basically said, "Are you ready to put up or are you going to shut up?" And I said, "I'm ready to put up." So I spoke with him and I did fill the paperwork to run as the Republican nominee for the counties of Norfolk and Bristol as a state senator. So my opposition will be Mr. Feely, a man whom I have great respect for. But as I've said before, let the market of ideas determine who they wish to be represented by. Do they wish to be represented by a Democrat with leftist-leaning ideas, or do they wish to be represented by a Republican who is an advocate for freedom, who wants, obviously, just like Mr. Feely, who wants what's best for his community, but I think I have better ideas about how to make that happen. I don't believe in redistribution of wealth. I believe in the creation of wealth. I believe in the creation of opportunities for people. I believe in a level playing field. I believe in fairness and equity for all. And that is something that I think differentiates me from my opponent. I want to create opportunities. I don't want my kids to say, "I can't live in Massachusetts because it's too expensive to live here." I want there to be opportunities for them that they can live a good life in Massachusetts. Or if they choose to go somewhere else, that's fine as well. And so I am officially announcing my candidacy. I am not the kind of the official candidate as of yet. So if that were the case, this would be my last show. But it may very well be one of my very last shows. For those of you who don't agree with me, I want to hear from you. For those of you that agree with me, I also want to hear from you. But I want to say thank you to this country. I am a man who wears
his emotions. Very close. I tear up pretty easily. I am. I consider myself a pretty tough guy, but I'm also, I guess, kind of a softie. But when I think about my grandfather, and I've talked about this on the show in the past, who died a broken man at my age. He was 60, 61. Because he didn't have the money to pay for medicines to relieve him of the pneumonia that he had. The only money that he had left in the world was $50. And he much rather wanted for that $50 to be used for his funeral than for any medication to prolong his life. He did not want to live anymore. He died poor and broken. And my father, who became an orphan after that, went on to provide for his family and worked very hard, only had a fourth grade education. Came to America in the early 50s and started out his life by working low-level jobs. And he never had a high-level job. He was a construction worker most of his life and worked in factories. And yet he instilled in his children this desire to improve yourself, to not be satisfied with what you have, but strive for more than what you had. And so all of us kids are college educated. My brother is a successful businessman. And this is all because of the American system, because of how the system has allowed people with ambition and with talent and with passion to get ahead in life. Now, are we all millionaires? Absolutely not, except for my brother. But we've done pretty well. This is the legacy that I wish to have for my children. I wish to make sure that this structure remains in place so that my kids and my kids' kids can also benefit from the fruit of liberty. And so I'll be giving you an update as to my candidacy. Thank you so much for listening to the show. God permitting, I will be here next week. And don't go away. Don't go away because we've got sports coming up here at 6:30. Take care. See you next week. God bless.
No, you can bring that up.
Good. Leave it there.